Welcome to From Wealth to Wellbeing, a podcast for families who know that their most important assets are their family members. I'm your host, Jenna Dunay, Chief Learning Officer here at Arlington. In this podcast, we'll help you proactively navigate the very human challenges that accompany wealth, get insight from industry experts, and share the latest tools and techniques to integrate a learning culture into your family. Let's get started. Welcome to From Wealth to Wellbeing. In today's episode, How to Maximize the Joy of Giving, we'll be chatting with Arlington Advisory Board member and prolific author and thinker, Jay Hughes. Jay is one of the leading voices on family governance, wealth preservation, and generational well-being. I'm really excited to share with you this conversation. It is jam-packed with Jay's wisdom. You'll learn how to shift your mindset away from just transferring money to bringing a spirit behind your giving. You'll learn how to ensure family members feel as though the gift is a blessing, not a burden. And finally, you'll receive practical steps on how to maximize the joy of giving today. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Jay. Jay, you're the author of many, many books, but the concepts I want to talk about in today's episode are the ones that are found in your book, The Cycle of the Gift. Now, you take a very interesting perspective on giving. I think for a lot of people, it feels, you know, pretty simple, right? Oh, I'm just going to give because that's what you're supposed to do. Or I'm going to do that because maybe there's a spiritual component. Maybe there's even a practical tax component, right? But a financial gift, particularly within a family, tends to be a little bit more complicated, isn't it? So why don't you tell us, why is that? Why is it so complicated?
Well, Jenna, thank you. First of all, a wonderful Western Greek writer whose name will be familiar to most of our listeners, Aristotle, was a great philosopher of the 5th century BC in Greece, was the first person I know to say, it's relatively easy to make a fortune. It's almost impossible to give one away.
That's an old saying then.
This is old wisdom. And what he was talking about was what constitutes a gift. And he said something that I've always loved. He says, to make a gift, you are doing something magnificent. You're expressing the heartfelt feeling of magnanimity. What an amazingly big word that is. Hard to say almost, it's so big.
That's a gold star word, Jay.
Yes. And I think all of our listeners can suddenly feel, oh, my heart got just engaged. And that's what Aristotle was asking us. He was asking us to understand that to make a gift, which is a pure act of the heart, an act of love, pure love, no strings, no expectations, I make a gift. He was saying that that's a magnificent act for a human being to do. I think that's one of the great gifts he's given us in imagining. The problem, of course, then, as our listeners are quickly imagining, is, well, wow, gifts are very unusual. Because what are we mostly doing? We're mostly making transfers. You can hear my voice. Magnanimity. Oof. Magnificence. Wow. Transfers. Not so good.
Even the words alone have a certain spirit to them.
Don't they? Mm-hmm. So the question of giving has to be looked at by the giver and say, am I making a gift? Pure love, magnificence, big-heartedness, no strings attached, or am I making a transfer?
And really behind that, that sounds like that's more of the spirit behind the giving. That's kind of what your thought process is around that, right?
Entirely. Acting magnificently is entirely spiritual. Mm. You are inspirited. And I would say something else that I've always loved. You have an aspiration that someone else's experience of life by virtue of the gift will be enhanced. Mm-hmm. You have no expectation. You simply have an aspiration that inspires you to act with love, with spirit toward that person.
So what does it mean for a family? So obviously it's very clear why it's a little complicated. It can get a little messy, right?
Right.
That's nothing new, as we heard from Aristotle, right? But what does it mean actually to be mindful when giving? And what does it look like to bring some spirit behind that giving?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is ask ourselves, what is our intention for the recipient?
It's a really big question. There's a lot of emotions that are wrapped up into that.
Huge numbers. In fact, I think for a parent to try to make a gift to a child is almost impossible. We do it all the time. We call them gifts, but mostly I think they're transfers. And by that, I don't mean that they're unthought through, that they're not intentional, but they have strings attached. We have expectations for that person.
Mm-hmm. We don't always communicate them either.
Oh, no, we almost never do.
Right.
In fact, if we recognize that most of the gifts we're talking about are gifts of specie, some form of financial capital, we're not talking for the moment about inspirited actions toward the other person. We could be, but mostly we're talking about a gift of specie, a gift of money, a gift of something. Since money is almost impossible to talk about anyway, one of wise man said that too, when we act with money toward another person, there is emotion connected. There are goals and aspirations connected. And almost certainly then we're making a transfer. We're not making a gift. And that's fine. But we need to know what our intention is. And then, Jenna, we need to ask a really profound question along with our intention. Are we intending to subsidize someone with goals and aspirations of our own? Or are we purely intending to enhance that person's life with no goals and aspirations and intentions of our own? That's how to measure one's intention.
So really the mindfulness comes back to what posture are you taking to the table when you offer this gift? Is it one that comes with a laundry list and intentionally or unintentionally of expectations with that gift? Or is it truly just a pure of heart gift? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I can imagine that's really hard for families. You see it all the time,
well,
I'm sure.
I think I wrote a book about it that you were kind enough to name at the beginning of our conversation because I think it's almost impossible. Now, I don't think it's impossible to act to another person.
What do you mean by that?
Well, certainly we love people and certainly we do want to enhance their lives. The question is whether we have goals and aspirations for them that then immediately create reciprocal duties and obligations. Mm-hmm. So if I have goals and aspirations for you, I act toward you, something called a gift or a transfer, whatever the intention is. If it's a transfer, I have goals and aspirations beyond love. I have goals and aspirations for you. Then I'm certainly making a transfer because you then assume in receiving that transfer either duties or obligations, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be both one or the other. So if you're acting with love, I seek to enhance your life. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
There are no duties and obligations, I assume, by receiving that. If you have aspirations and intentions for me beyond pure enhancement, love, then I do, when I receive that, assume duties and obligations with respect to that action.
That's really, really good. Now, I would like to actually go back to that book that I mentioned, The Cycle of the Gift. I actually have a quote here that I want to read to you that you wrote, and I want to talk about it a little bit because I think it's really, really interesting. In the book, you said, this includes understanding yourself as the giver. So you were talking about the individuals who would be giving the gift. Understanding the recipient of your gift and understanding the quality of your relationship will directly affect your ability to give well, the recipient's ability to receive well, and your respective abilities to feel freer as a result of the gift. And I kind of underlined feel freer because I was like, wow, that's pretty powerful. So where practically, you know, we've kind of talked, we can kind of see where there might be some expectations and that might not make somebody feel free, but what are some other practical ways that you've seen recipients not feel free and how do families avoid that?
Well, I'll start with the end of your question. One avoids this by asking a profound question. Am I intending purely to enhance your life, or do I have goals and aspirations? I'm repeating myself purposefully for you to exercise and act in a certain way. As soon as I have goals and aspirations for how you act, you are not free. Mm. By definition, it's impossible.
Right.
I think a way for people to understand this, because we are talking about some very, very complicated consciousness questions. I think a very easy way for people to think about this is to say, well, what is my intention? Is my intention to offer a blessing or a blessing with burdens or mostly burdens? So if I'm intending to give you a blessing, I'm intending to make you more free. Mm. That's clear, yes?
Right.
Blessing leads to greater freedom. I'm not anticipating what the recipient will do and whether they will become more free or not. I'm simply sitting with my intention. I send you a blessing. I hope this will make you more free. As soon as I impose duties and obligations, I am now moving to some extent away from blessing and toward burden. To the extent that I impose duties and obligations based on my action toward you. Now I've made a pure transfer. It's all burden. I'm actually transferring to you a whole bunch of burdens. So I ask people very carefully, is your intention to offer a blessing with burdens, or burdens? All are fine. I'm not suggesting any are not fine. I'm just simply asking the person to ask themselves that question. Because to the extent that it moves past blessing to blessing and burden, or all the way to burden, it makes the recipient less and less and less free.
That totally makes sense.
it's a kind of a continuum. Mm-hmm. Way over on the right-hand side is pure blessing. And way over on the left-hand side is pure burden. And then in between those burden and blessing, you have a consistent number of little dashes on a measuring stick that move you from one to the other. And by the way, sometimes I actually sit down with people and I say, let's make a picture. Let's make a picture. So here's a burden, here's blessing, here's pure transfer, here's pure gift. Let's put them on a measuring stick. Mm-hmm. And let's put a little few dots. What's your intention? Dot for me, your intention, because I can assure you, as you're the person's doing that, that the greater or lesser freedom of the recipient will exactly match where you put the dots. Make sense?
Totally makes sense. How does that play out in real life? Like, can you give us an example of what that looks like?
Well, there's a lovely story, and we're doing this particular interview at Christmas time. So I'm going to tell you the story of Mrs. Jones.
Oh, I can't wait. This sounds fun.
So let's imagine that in December the 12th of the year 2020, Mr. Andrews calls his client, Mrs. Jones, Mr. J. Andrews, as a tax accountant. And he says, Mrs. Jones, have you written the checks? Oh, Mr. Andrews, how nice to talk to you. Oh, have yes. And Mrs. Jones, have you written the checks? Oh, I hadn't written the checks. Oh, would you please do that? Because, you know, Christmas is coming. And what he's really talking about is making sure that she makes the annual gifts that the law permits, so she makes a good tax decision.
Right. So it's more methodical. It's more transfer, as you call it.
Well, let's hear what happens. So she gets out her checkbook. She writes the checks to her children and her grandchildren, and dutifully, she calls her son, Bob. Bob, I have the checks. Oh, Mom, I will be right over. And on Christmas morning, Bob gives out the checks. All right. Now it's December the 10th, 2021. And the same Mrs. Jones gets the same call from Mr. Andrews. Mrs. Jones, oh, Mr. Andrews, lovely to hear from you. And he says, Mrs. Jones, have you written the checks? She says, I haven't, Mr. Andrews, thank you, I'll get right to it. She gets out her checkbook. And she starts to write the check to Bob. And she says, oh, you know, I never heard from Bob last Christmas. I didn't get any thank you. I didn't hear a thing from Bob. So she goes on to her son, Sam. I didn't hear from Sam either. And then she thinks about her granddaughter, Rose. You know, I didn't hear from Rose either. She closes her checkbook. Christmas morning, her son, Bob, gets up at the Christmas. Everybody's arranged. Everybody's waiting. Nothing. They're waiting. Nothing. And finally, Simba says, Bob, the checks? He said, I'm sorry, Mom's gone crazy.
Well, that's one way to put it. So she had some expectations about receiving a thank you.
She did. And those are, and by the way, that's not a lack of freedom or gain by the recipient. It's just plain good manners.
Right, exactly.
But I think if somebody writes a check as a pure gift and they don't hear, that's, you know, so Mrs. Jones decided that everybody had become entitled. Everybody, Jenna, had become entitled to those checks from Mom and Grandma. Now, part of the story that we usually don't tell is most of them had already spent the money.
Right. They were expecting it to come.
Yeah. There was no gift involved at all. The whole process was a sham. All essentially good, dutiful mom and grandmother responding to the tax accountant about what was the right thing to do, having done it dutifully over the years. And suddenly realizing she wasn't making any gifts anymore. She was just making transfers. So how's that for an illustration at Christmas time?
That's a great illustration. So how does a family go from having that potentially happen in their family to having a real great, how do you maximize the joy of giving in that instead?
Well, one of the wonderful techniques that I love is grandparent-grandchild philanthropy.
Yes, you mentioned that in your book and talked about how the importance of grandparents or elders in this process is super important. Why do you find it so critical?
Well, there are natural emotional connections between grandparents and grandchildren. Sorry to tell our listeners that the Chinese have a proverb that the grandparents and grandchildren are the natural enemies of the parents. It's a nicer way to put it, natural allies against the parents. But I think the Chinese have kind of got it right. So what am I talking about? Well, there is a natural interest in grandparents and grandchildren in their storytelling, in their communication. And one of the techniques that I love about making gifts and not transfers is grandparents sitting down with their grandchildren and asking their grandchildren to tell them what they'd like to make a gift to.
That's really good.
And what would they be willing to go out and talk to an organization, find a place that they really love to make a gift, and then go and deliver it to that organization? Think about that for a moment. So here are the grandparents listening to their grandchildren, telling them stories, of course, because that's what grandparents and grandparents do, grandchildren do. And the result of that then being each of the grandchildren advising the grandparents about a cause that they really believe in, and the grandparent writing a little check, age appropriate check, and then the child, grandchild going and delivering it. That's pure gifts.
That's good.
It's not just teaching philanthropy. People say, oh, you're just teaching philanthropy, Jay. No, I'm not. What I'm trying to do is to build into a family system the recognition of how you can do these things. Now, both my wife, Jackie, and I have done this with our grandchildren. And it was the most fun I think we almost ever had.
What was so fun about it for you?
Well, just listening to the presentations by the grandchildren about their dreams for someone else and how they would handle it and what they were, why this was so important to them. And then that they would go to the organization and deliver the check. And of course, it gave us an opportunity to tell some stories too, which we love doing. So there's a reciprocity of love. And in this case, a third party benefited, or many third parties benefited. But the real benefit was the interior discussion between the grandparents and the grandchildren around what makes a gift. Where is love? Where is the capacity to enhance someone else's life? So that's one technique that I think deeply illustrates. I might add one other thing, Jenna, that is very important in that story too, is the actions are pure enhancement of each other's hearts and experiences. There's no subsidy. One of the problems in transfers and gifts is most transfers are some form of subsidy. Think back to my little story of Mrs. Jones. There was no enhancement left in her action. She didn't know that, bless her heart, but she found that all she was doing was subsidizing. And subsidizing creates dependence.
Mm-hmm.
And dependence is the antithesis of more freedom. You feel that equation?
Oh, that totally makes sense.
On the other hand, if I'm seeking to enhance your life as best I can, then I'm really seeking to do something that increases your human freedom. So with the grandparent-grandchildren, the grandparents were giving the grandchildren an opportunity to experience enhancement and no subsidy. These are nuanced things, but they're foundational about how things really work.
That's so good. Thank you for sharing that, Jay. I think that's a great practical example of even how you're using it in your own personal family, which is always really helpful for other families to hear what other people are doing and seeing it walk out practically. So we talked about obviously grandparents, and kind of the last kind of final question that I have for you is, are there any other practical ways that families, so parents, right, can start today to either maybe have those conversations with their children or just think proactively around their giving? I know you mentioned they need to be asking themselves that really important, you know, fundamental question of what's my motivation, right? What other questions should they be asking themselves or other people?
Well, there is some science about how people are hardwired to spend. Jolene Godfrey and some others in our field have done some really serious scientific study of how people are hardwired on their spending habits. Some people are savers, some are enjoy spending, and you have sort of everything in between. You have profligacy, you have all kinds of things. And literature has been writing about these spending habits for centuries. People are curious about this. There's some pretty good stories and some sad stories. So again, if you think of a continuum, as we were discussing earlier in this from the miser all the way to the wastrel, you have a continuum, don't you? And everything in between. So when parents act toward children, I find that it's very useful to ask them, what have you observed about your children's spending habits? By the way, there's some stories in the Bible about this too, about what happened to the gift of the three sons, a famous story about what each did with the money that is a wonderfully illustrative story. What did they do with it? Really great story. So I say to the parents, why not think a little bit with your children as if you're going to make a gift, not a transfer, of how they spend, and not impose how you would spend. That's a disaster. Now, teaching to be a saver, teaching to be frugal. Oh, of course, I'm not saying that. Of course, that's necessary. These are virtues, and temperance and prudence are great virtues. And literally, going all the way back to our Greek friends again, these are important virtues. They're useful to how one lives one's life. But looking at how people spend, what's their hardwiring, then tends to give the giver a sense of how to have that which is being given integrated into that particular child's way of acting. Simply saying everybody gets the same today isn't very thoughtful. That's why there's that old statement in our field that fair isn't equal and equal isn't fair. What really matters is looking at each recipient as a human spirit separate to that human spirit. And saying, if I act on this person, what will be the consequence of my action? And in this particular case, what is likely to be the spending way of that person? And then essentially making a gift into that person's integrity in a way that he or she can best receive it. Without getting too far off, this is the concept in the cycle of the gift that I developed called the meteor. So I act on you, I put some money in your life, you didn't create that, it's not your integrity, you've got to incorporate a meteor that I sent to you. Mm-hmm. And so I might sort of end this wonderful conversation by another practical suggestion to the parents or the grandparents or the aunts and uncles, wherever it is. What did you put in the meteor? What'd you put in the meteor? What's the spirit that's in the meteor or not there? So when you let it go, it's gone. Now the other person receives it and has to incorporate it. But what's in the meteor? Yeah, maybe it's $5, maybe it's $10, maybe it's $1,000. But what else is in that meteor? Is it expectation that leads to burden? Is it love that leads to blessing? What did you put in the meteor? And I think that I've found now over the years since we wrote that book that it's really helpful to donors, givers, whomever it may be, to ask that profound question. What did I put in the meteor? I see what Mr. Hughes is saying. It is a meteor. That other person is going to receive it. And they've got to integrate it. They've got to add it to themselves. So what did I put in there? Isn't that an interesting question? What's in that meteor?
Thank you, Jay. I think that's a great way for us to kind of close our conversation and thinking about that question, what is in that meteor? And if you're listening to this conversation, think about yourself and your own motivations and what is in the meteor of the gifts that you may be giving in your own life. So thank you, as always, Jay, for your wonderful words of wisdom. We just cherish them so much.
It's a joy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.